Welcome into the Towel Boys. I'm Tyler Bischoff over here at Mountain West Connection. He's Mike Gramala at runrevs.com. Do you call it runrevs.com or just runrevs?
Runrevs.com when I'm talking about it, and I think just runrevs when I'm in print.
Okay, I gotcha. Didn't know what you preferred, Mike. But, you know, I was watching on TV the Las Vegas Outlaws home opener, and your little ad on the banner that says follow Run Rebs on Twitter still runs during the Las Vegas Outlaws game.
Nice.
So you expecting to get a lot of followers from that crossover there?
I think we've gotten a big spike during and after that game.
The arena football team that didn't score in the first quarter of its first ever game. That's not a good sign. But we're talking UNLV. We can talk Las Vegas Outlaws. I'm not quite prepared, but if you want to, Mike, we can go in depth on Las Vegas Outlaws.
So what are they, like a defense and running game kind of team?
Yeah.
That's how they're going to try and win?
The Arena Bowl, yeah, with defense. They actually, I think they gave up 3 rushing touchdowns in that game. Their first 2 touchdowns were both quarterback sneaks or quarterback draws, whatever the hell it was. So, yeah, maybe they are a running team, and that's probably not going to work very well, though. But UNLV-wise, we're going to start with Wichita State and the Mountain West Missouri Valley Challenge, or I don't know what its official name is, but the challenge between those two conferences.
Sounds like a great matchup. Wichita State, Final Four a couple years ago, Sweet 16 this year. I bet everyone's excited that UNLV has them on the schedule now.
You would think so, but no, everybody's just literally complaining about every possible outcome. I mean, they're like, I haven't seen one person say something positive about this.
Which is, I guess I don't understand. Like, I even saw someone complaining about how it would affect like the schedule with like their finals. Like, it's right after the Maui Invitational and then they have finals the next week. And then like this Wichita State trip is now like sandwiched in there somewhere. And it's, when have you ever heard like anyone in the general public complain about basketball interfering with these student athletes' class workload? Like, you never hear it. You only hear that when it's convenient and they don't want to play a team.
For UNLV, because we're going to talk about this from UNLV's standpoint and then sort of the Mountain West standpoint. But for UNLV, I don't think it's the greatest thing in the world that they got Wichita State or that they're in this challenge, but it's not awful. Like, it's not horrible. It's not this terrible curse that they have been dealt for next season. Like, what's the worst case scenario?
The worst case scenario, you go there, you lose by 25 points, and then I guess the committee makes note of it on Selection Sunday down the road. But is it really that big of a negative to get beaten at Wichita State these days?
No.
I don't think that's going to be a huge red mark on their ledger at the end of the year.
They are 59-3 at home the last 4 years. So UNLV's probably not going to win the game. So worst case scenario is, you know, I had put 20-point loss. You said 25. So somewhere in that neighborhood. But at the end of the day, if you go to Wichita State and lose by 25, the last 4 years, Wichita State's been a top 20 RPI team. They've been a top 25 KenPom team. You're going to play a really quality opponent. The way RPI works, now the committee devalued RPI this year as compared to years in the past, but the way RPI works, how much you get beat by doesn't matter. So you'd have a road loss to a top 20 RPI team. That would actually help your RPI a lot. And then as far as KenPom takes into account efficiencies, but a 20-point loss to what should be an efficient team next year won't really hurt you that much in terms of the KenPom ranking. So like, yes, you're probably not going to win the game if you're UNLV, but this isn't going to be a bad loss. Like, unless you lose by 70, like, that's the only way this is, like, a bad loss, but I don't see that happening. I mean, Wichita State's not that good. So, to me, this is, like, the worst possible outcome really isn't that bad. And
the best case scenario
is you go on the road and you beat Wichita State, and Wichita State goes 35-3. Like, you could have one of the best wins in the nation, like they did this year against Arizona. You could have one of the best wins in the nation. So, to me, it's, I don't know, like, it's not the best thing in the world, but it's not terrible. To me, like, on a scale of 1 to 10, if 10's good and 1's bad, this is like a 6 or a 7.
Yeah, I don't see the downside of this game being on the schedule. I guess it's going to make your travel schedule a little tougher for, during that week. But that's what if you're a player, that's what you signed up for. You signed up because you wanted to play these marquee games. You want to play these top teams. You want to go to all these. You know, that's how they sell a lot of these recruits. Hey, we're going to go to Kansas. We're going to go to Arizona. We're going to get Duke on the strip. We're going to play these games. So if you're a player, like the players, I'm sure, are not complaining about this game.
Yeah, Jordan Cordes, I think, tweeted, like, that's why we came to
UNLV. Yeah, exactly. Like, the players have to be excited about it. The coaching staff may be a little miffed about, you know, having to work the travel in there now, because it's not an easy venue to get to. But in terms of upside and downside, it's like the upside is really, really high and the downside is not that bad.
Yeah, and as far as the scheduling goes, like you mentioned, the Maui Invitational, the last day is a week before this game. So it's not like they're going to be tired or something. Like, teams are playing NCAA tournament games two times in 3 days. Like, they're going to be fine in terms of tiredness.
Do we know if they're going to do we know if they have a game scheduled in between Maui and when Wichita State is scheduled for now? Or
I don't think there's nothing for certain scheduled then, but I don't think there will be, no. Cuz that'll be the they don't normally play a game right after Thanksgiving, do they?
The last couple of years they've played the Saturday after Thanksgiving.
The Saturday. Yeah. Okay. I'd imagine they wouldn't. But who knows? Maybe they do. If they do, you're still fine, because you're still playing less games than you would, like, in an NCAA tournament run type thing in a certain weekend. But and as you mentioned, the exam things, like, you know, Duke just had guys take a final exam on an airplane, or not a final exam, an exam on an airplane, you know, traveling back and forth during the NCAA tournament. Like, they're going to be fine. They're going to make it. This isn't some awful thing. It does mean that, you know, he's going to have a really good schedule. Well, they already were going to have a really good schedule, but schedule's even better. They're playing back at Arizona, right, next year?
Yes.
And then Arizona State's coming to
Thomas and Mack.
Okay. And then they go to Maui, where don't know who they'll get, but it's Kentucky, Indiana, UCLA, Vanderbilt, Wake Forest, St. John's, and Chaminade. So hopefully they don't get Vandy, Wake Forest, and Chaminade. That'd be kind of crappy. But probably going to get at least one of Kansas, Indiana, UCLA. So, going to be another pretty good non-conference schedule, or really good non-conference schedule. Wichita State just adds to that. Now, from the Mountain West standpoint, similar to the UNLV standpoint, just complaining. Like, nobody's, like, happy at all about this, and I don't quite get it. But I want to ask you this. If you're the Mountain West, when you're scheduling these games, what's the priority? Is it getting the most exposure, or is it like being fair or trying to improve scheduling? Like, what's your priority if you're the Mountain West trying to schedule these games?
Well, if you look at the announcement that the press release, I believe it was something about, you know, wanting to raise the, let me take a look at what the actual line is, but I think it's something about, like, they wanted to raise the strength of schedule for the entire conference and just get more premier matchups between, you know, to let's see what they say here. Tough non-conference scheduling has always been paramount in improving our league's stature on the national scene. This series helps institutions in both leagues achieve that goal. So it basically, they just want a chance to play some of the premier teams from each conference and sort of match them up together.
If I'm the Mountain West, there would be two things that I would be worried about. One would be improving scheduling, because it has been kind of bad. I mean, Wyoming plays like 330-something strength of schedule this past year, like literally one of the worst 20 schedules in the country. So improving scheduling, and if you were going to improve scheduling for your better teams, you would probably try to match up like Wyoming with Wichita State, or Colorado State with Wichita State, or Northern Iowa, them too. They're one of the top two teams. Like, those are the teams, maybe Boise, you would try to match up with their top two teams.
Like, the argument that I sort of understand is that UNLV, if they wanted to travel to Wichita State, like, that's a game they could schedule themselves.
Yeah.
Like, which I'm sure, like, I'm sure they probably would have no desire to do that, but if they wanted to go to Wichita State, like, they could, like, I'm sure Wichita State would be open to that. But so you would maybe want to try and match up teams that couldn't get those premier games, like if you like a Wyoming, like if you give Wichita State and Wyoming, like those two teams may not be able to schedule each other, but if you pit them against each other in this challenge, now that they're, you know, they're sort of raising each other's profile and the strength of schedule.
So they gave Colorado State Northern Iowa, and because of that, San Diego State's playing like Illinois State or some
Illinois
so
State.
San Diego State kind of got screwed out of having a decent matchup or a good matchup, but Colorado State benefits there. So to me, they sort of said, okay, we're going to give a team a game that they normally wouldn't get, and maybe Colorado State could get Northern Iowa, but, you know, they helped Colorado State out there. The other priority, if I was the Mountain West, would be exposure. And it's like, you don't want to set up this challenge and have no good games, and have no games with any, like, historical or right now impact. And so if you were to set it up just purely for exposure, just we want to have some big games that get on TV, you would match up. I mean, there's five teams between these two conferences that would get you any exposure: UNLV, San Diego State, Northern Iowa, Wichita State, and New Mexico. And I almost would say no to New Mexico because a lot of people don't know anything about New Mexico that are on the other side of the Rocky Mountains. So if you were just going for exposure, you would put UNLV, San Diego State versus Wichita State and Northern Iowa. They got UNLV versus Wichita State, and again, San Diego State's going off to play somebody else. So, to me, those would be the two most important things, and they basically split that. They gave Colorado State a good game, and they got sort of their premier matchup, even though UNLV only had 18 wins. They got sort of their premier matchup. I don't have a problem with that at all.
It's a, say they had given Wichita State to, I don't know, Boise State, and they match up those two teams, and then Northern Iowa is playing Colorado State, and I guess that those are mutually beneficial matchups for both of those teams. Then UNLV is going to end up traveling to, I don't know, Missouri State or Southern Illinois, and are people going to be happy with that game if UNLV has to play one of those teams?
No. Yeah, going back to the UNLV standpoint, what matchup in the challenge would make a UNLV fan happy? None of them. Like, I guess a home game against Wichita State would be the happiest fans would be, right?
I guess, but that I feel like there's more downside playing them at home than playing them on the road. Like, if they come in here, if they come into Vegas and beat you at the Thomas and Mack Center, that's more of a black eye to your record than if you, you know, sort of go on the road and sort of play with nothing to lose.
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't know, people complaining it just shouldn't happen. If you go back to the kind of Mountain West standpoint, you know, it's a lot of what's the point, this doesn't help at all, and if the Mountain West is going to do a challenge, they should try a Power 5 conference. That's not going to happen. If the Mountain West should do a challenge, they should try to get the AAC or the Big East or whatever, or somebody that's maybe not a power conference. And, you know, sure, that sounds nice and all, but that's probably not going to happen either. And at the end of the day, this doesn't hurt. Like, playing the Missouri Valley doesn't hurt you. Because, like, I you know, they had a couple teams that were sub-300 RPI. Well, so did the Mountain West. And you've got teams in there. Like, there's not any great matchups. Like, UNLV, Wichita State, the best matchup, and UNLV wasn't good last year. They might lose by 15 in that game. So there's not, like, to me, I look at it and I'm like, there's no games on here that I circle and say, gotta watch that, except for, like, UNLV, Wichita State, if I'm, you know, sort of somebody from wherever else. So, to me, I don't understand all the complaining. Because it's not like these are taking games. It's not like Wyoming was going out and playing Kansas, and now they can't play Kansas because they have to play in this challenge. No, Wyoming was going out and playing Florida A&M in Stetson. Like, that's who Wyoming was playing. So, to me, this isn't like some terrible thing. Sure, it's not a great thing, but everybody's acting like this is the worst thing in the world, and the Mountain West is terrible for scheduling this, when it's just kind of like, you know, they scheduled a challenge with a conference. It's kind of cooler than just saying, hey, go schedule teams.
It's not going to move the needle one way or the other very much. I feel like if you didn't call it the Mountain West Missouri Valley Challenge and publicize it and just let these games play out over a two-week span, like a random Drake versus Nevada game in mid-December, and then I don't think people would even notice that this challenge was going on.
And you know what is strange is, like, Northern Iowa is going to play at New Mexico, and that has nothing to do with the challenge. Like next year, they scheduled that game separately. And so, I think New Mexico kind of screwed themselves out of having a decent matchup because, I can't remember, I think they get a home game against Loyola of Chicago.
Yes.
That's a treat. But, I don't know, like...
But it's good because now if they split the first 10 matchups, that New Mexico-UNI game can be the tiebreaker for this very important Mountain West Missouri Valley Challenge.
You know, you mentioned another thing, like 2 weeks. It's actually almost a month. It's November 13th through December 20th.
Oh, yeah, so it's over a month.
So, like...
These are just going to be random games that pop up on the schedule. If it wasn't called the Mountain West Missouri Valley Challenge, these would just be random non-conference games. Like,
I've seen people complain that it's going to be played out that long. That it's not, like, a four-game span. Or four-day span. Like, you know, I think the power conferences do theirs over the course of, like, a Thursday-Sunday. So, to me, it's, like, the whole Twitter response to this, it was just people wanted to complain about something, so they picked the most dumb crap to complain about. Like, none of this is a huge deal.
No. If you asked people going into this, before this schedule was released, and told them that this challenge was going to happen, and asked them which Missouri Valley teams they would want to play, like, it's either UNI or Wichita State. So from UNLV's perspective, I think they came out okay. The rest of the – and if, I just don't think it's going to move the needle much in terms of the overall from the conference's perspective. I don't see how anyone could be vehemently against this.
Yeah, but it feels like it is. Like, it feels like there's a lot of people that are –
There are. I haven't seen, like, really any – the only positive comments I've seen are from Jordan Cornish, and everything else has just been negative. But I don't understand it.
And it – if you were picking, you would pick Wichita State because Northern Iowa plays slower than Wyoming, and it's like you don't want to watch that. So you would pick Wichita State, no doubt. Like UNLV got the like best team you could play. It's kind of a de facto loss since you have to go to there, but I don't know. It's just people complaining because they want to complain. All right, UNLV's roster next year. Who the hell is going to be on it, Mike? All right, let's start with Dantley Walker. He's transferring out. I don't know what you sound like you might have had something planned, or maybe you're just going to start crying. I don't know. But what do you want to say about Dantley?
It wasn't the most surprising move. I think a lot of people sort of saw that coming. He didn't really get much of a chance to play this year. UNLV, obviously, with the way they recruit, they just keep bringing in these highly ranked guards and people that sort of play his position, and he was the lone leftover from the Lon Kruger era. He had committed to Kruger before Rice got the job. Rice honored that commitment even after Walker went on his 2-year mission. So he's sort of like the last holdover, and they just keep recruiting over him, which is great from a UNLV perspective because they're getting a lot of talented players. But it just, you could see the writing on the wall. It really wasn't going to happen for Walker here. He was not going to get the chance to play. So I don't think it was that surprising. It opens up a scholarship at UNLV, which could be important in terms of filling out the roster. Because as of right now, they don't have many guys. They could be really short next year. And they're going to have to start recruiting in the spring. They're going to have to do a lot of spring recruiting to sort of fill out the roster.
Yeah, so if we look at it, you get 13 scholarships in college basketball. Barring anything that would really be a huge surprise, they've got 9 guys for sure next year. You got Pat McCall, Jerome Seegers, Daquan Cook, Jordan Cornish, Dwayne Morgan, Okonobo, Ben Carter, and then Poyser and Derek Jones that are both freshmen that'll be freshmen next year. That's 9 guys for sure. Then you've got 4 question marks, even though 2 of them don't seem to be as big of question marks, but Rashad Vaughn, who appears to be gone. Chris Wood, who we think is gone, even though he tweeted at 70-30 he might come back. And then Steven Zimmerman could come to UNLV. And then Justin Jackson could reclassify into this year's class and would be at UNLV next year. So that's 13 different guys right there. 9 of them are going to be at UNLV next year. 4 of them are big question marks. But if you look at this, you know, if we assume Rashad Vaughn's gone, and for the time being we'll assume Chris Wood is gone, and assume Zimmerman comes and Jackson reclassifies, they've still got two scholarships. Who do they get at that point?
It's recruiting out of high school this late in the process can sometimes be tricky. They've been burned there before. Jamal Ates was a guy they got late. He's a guy they started recruiting in the summer of his senior year, and they ended up signing him, got him on campus like a couple weeks before practice started, or maybe even right before practice started, maybe even closer. And then, you know, he only lasted a couple games before he transferred out. Recruiting high school that late is so can sometimes be a little bit tricky. You might be looking at grad school transfers, guys who are going to come in for 1 year, like the Cody Doolin, Jerome Seegers plan, or I guess the Cody Doolin plan, you would want someone that would come in and play right away. So someone like that, you could leave a scholarship open for a midseason transfer. They've done that before. That's how they got Ken Burch. You know, they went into the season with an open scholarship, and then when he decided to transfer between semesters, like they were able to bring him in, they had the space. So a few different ways they could go, depending on, you know, what they see as the team needs. Like maybe if they think they're a little thin in the front court, they could go for some like a more experienced like big man that's looking to transfer, something like that. But yeah, so they're gonna have to get kind of creative to fill out the roster, especially if Zimmerman ends up going elsewhere.
Yeah, so if Zimmerman comes, you know, he's got three big men in Okonobo, Carter, and Zimmerman. If Zimmerman doesn't come to UNLV, you got Dwayne Morgan as your third big man again. And so, assuming Wood's gone, really to me, assuming whether Zimmerman comes or not, one of those other scholarships has got to go to a big man that can come in and play 10 minutes at any given point right away, right?
Yeah, you can't. We saw what happened this year when they tried to play that rotation. Then you're going to lose your best rebounder by far in Chris Wood. You definitely need some. You got to bring in someone that can sort of help shore that up.
Now, maybe Dave, I doubt it, but if he would want to go small, you could do that. I mean, Jordan Cornish or Dwayne Morgan or even Pat McCall, and then both of the freshmen coming in probably could do it to an extent too. I mean, you could play small with essentially four guards and a big man. I would not have a problem with that. I think it'd be more entertaining, but I don't know that Dave would be very happy doing that next year.
I think it would all come down to how effective it is, but I mean, considering they couldn't really rebound this year with playing a more conventional lineups,
you just screw rebounding. You just screw it all.
Okay, you just make all your shots.
Well, you don't worry about offensive rebounding, period. Defensive rebounding, I mean, you got to do it to some extent, but just screw it all. You just get out with your four guards, you get spacing, you shoot it, and you run. That's what you do.
Okay.
You make if the other team's going to play two big men, you make them pay for playing two big men because you're already going to be paying the price. So that's what you do. If you go small, you just say screw it to rebounding. You don't even worry about it. Just go. Just make them pay however you can. But, I mean, let's go back to Chris Wood because he responded to Steven Zimmerman's mom on Twitter, who she said something like, "All eyes on Chris Wood." And he responded with Chris Wood ? 70-30 chance he comes back. He then deleted that tweet. But is it really a 70-30 chance he comes back?
Who knows? It's an 18-year-old kid like tweeting. Like who knows? He's probably joking around. If that were the actual split, that would be very, very surprising to me. Like if he was trying to be like truthful and saying like, "Hey, I'm 70% leaning towards coming back," like I would have a hard time. Like that's not what I would have estimated.
Yeah, not at all. I would probably put it the other way, like 37.
Probably even 50. Further the other way.
Yeah.
So I don't know, but I don't know. It's what could be. I think he's joking. I can't see that as being a serious tweet.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't so much see it as a serious tweet either, but
the fact that he was responding to someone when he said it.
Yeah, I don't know. Can we psychoanalyze Chris Wood? Behavioral analysis on Christian Wood.
We could do a deep dive into his Twitter timeline and sort of
We
could create a spreadsheet of how many tweets of his are serious and how many are joking. Then we could sort of come up with the probability percentage of whether he was joking this time. And like if he's joking on his Twitter 90% of the time, then we can kind of throw out this last tweet. But if he's a super serious dude on Twitter, then hey, maybe we got something to talk about.
What we need, and neither one, Mike, you and I, we aren't up to the level of Ziegler over the San Diego Union Tribune. We need him to ask him questions on Twitter, because then we'll find out if, like, Dave Rice needs to be worried or something.
Yeah.
Or if the NBA needs to be worried. I don't know.
Yeah. Are you coming back to UNLV, or does the NBA need to be worried about you?
Oh, God. I hope we get to ask him that. That would be great. That would be pretty tremendous. So we're talking about the roster. 9 guys that they have for sure. Let's say Zimmerman comes next year, and let's say Rashad Vaughn and Chris Wood are gone. So, you know, top 6 or 7 guys is going to be Seegers, Pat McCaw, Jordan Cornish, Dwayne Morgan, Okonobo, Ben Carter, Steven Zimmerman, and then you got the 2 freshmen in Poyser and Jones, and I think there's a decent chance one of them, at least, is a major player in the rotation by the end of the year, if not both. But is that top 7 good enough to win the Mountain West?
I mean, it's going to depend on there's some guys that you sort of know what you're getting. I think Ben Carter is kind of a guy you sort of know what you're getting. He's sort of
Do you, though? Because, like, he only started 5 games in 2 years at Oregon, and he, like, only averaged, like, what? 3 or 4 points in both years he was there.
I'm not expecting a superstar performance. I'm expecting him to get a guy who's going to, you know, play, you know, close to the basket. He's going to mix it up a little bit. Maybe he'll knock down a few jumpers. But you know, a guy who could sort of hold his own, maybe rebound the ball a little bit. Sort of the stuff we saw in practice this year. I don't expect him to come out and be a 20-10 guy, but you know, something like 8-8 in, you know, 25, 26 minutes a game, something like that, I think is doable. So something like that. But it depends sort of on how big a step forward your Patrick McCaws and your Jordan Cornishes and your Okonobos. Like, how do they make that leap? Like, if Patrick McCaw becomes the best player in the Mountain West, then you got a chance to win it. If, you know, Jordan Cornish becomes, you know, 16-point-per-game scorer and a good defender, like, then you've got a chance. If Dwayne Morgan becomes, like, the player everyone, you know, thought he was going to be, then you've got a chance. Like, if all those things happen, it could be a great top 7, and you don't really have to worry about 8 through 13. But odds are not everybody is going to, you know, is going to improve that much between year 1 and year 2.
I'm extremely pessimistic. Like, when I try to answer that question myself, I don't think that's a good enough 7 to win the Mountain West. I don't think that's a good enough 7 to be a lock in the NCAA tournament. Like, to me, that's a 7 that, yeah, 3rd in the Mountain West, and you're a bubble team. Like, because Pat McCaw, we all love Pat McCaw. I will probably say this the entire summer, if he's expected to increase his workload, his efficiency is going to go down. Like, it's very rare that you improve your work or increase your workload and your efficiency goes up. Like, that just doesn't, like, Derek Marks did it this year, and that was extremely rare. Like, it doesn't happen that often that you're asked to do more and you start shooting it better or even shooting it the same. He's probably going to shoot worse next year. Jerome Seegers at Rutgers wasn't like some, like, his last year at Rutgers, he only started like half the games. So he's not like some wonderful star that you're going to have in the backcourt. He's going to be a good starting guard, but he's nothing that's going to make you win the Mountain West. Does Jordan Cornish take a big step? I think he could.
He also falls into what you were saying about increasing the workload. He's a guy who could really afford to pick his spots this year. A lot of his,
you know. Yeah. Yeah, so yeah, if you have to have Jordan Cornish scoring next year, he's not going to be shooting 45% or whatever. What did he finish at, 48? 48. He's not going to shoot 48% if you need him to score next year. If he's sort of in a similar role, maybe increase it a little bit. Maybe he can still shoot close to that, but if you've got to have him scoring 10, 12, 15 a game, he's not shooting 48%. And then, you know, is Daquan Cook going to do it? Is it Daquan or Daquan?
Daquan.
Daquan, okay. Is Daquan Cook going to do anything special next year?
Daquan.
I don't know.
That may speak to these sort of expectations that we have for Cook next year, that he's been here for 2 years and a third year as a redshirt, and I would still have to consult the media guy to know how to pronounce his first name. I think it's Daquan.
Daquan, okay. Yeah, we saw some offense from Okonobo, but not enough to where it's like, oh, he's going to be an offensive post presence every game. You know, with Ben Carter, it's not like he was a star at Oregon. Like, never averaged over 5 points. And maybe one of the freshmen is really good. I mean, maybe Poyser, maybe Derek Jones is really good. I mean, we know Derek Jones can dunk. But, I wouldn't count on either one of them being as good as Pat McCall was this year, because Pat McCall was awesome. And then Zimmerman comes in. He's 7 foot, pretty athletic, can score. Like, if you get him, that's a big boost to your offense. But I don't know that he comes in and you say, okay, this team's top seven is great. So I look at the roster next year, if Wood and Vaughn are both gone, and I kind of say, who's going to score? And I don't think those 7 or 8 guys are good enough to win the Mountain West, which would ultimately be a disappointing year and Dave Rice gets fired.
Yeah, if you're looking for a team, they're not going to be stone cold favorites coming into the Mountain West season. I can't see them being, the favorites to win the conference outright. No matter, unless you get everybody coming back and all the recruits, commit here. I don't think they're going to be the favorites going in. Like I said, you're sort of letting it ride with the recruiting class that you brought in last year, and you're sort of banking on those guys to be the cornerstones and those guys to, sort of be good enough to contend. So your hope is not, you don't want to go into a season hoping for things, but you're kind of hoping that those guys are going to make enough improvements to get you there. Or you're hoping that if Zimmerman comes, he is one of those few, impact freshmen who comes in and, can be 15 and 10 right away or something like that. I'm not going to say that that the blueprint is like perfect, because it's not. It's like there's a lot of hope involved in this team be contending for a championship next year.
If for whatever reason Rashad Vaughn and Chris Wood came back, then I do think they would have a good enough 7 to win the Mountain West.
I would say even more. I think they would be the favorites, like the runaway favorites.
Yeah,
of those two
guys. I would think so too. But I think besides Chris Wood tweeting it's 70-30 chance he comes back, everything says they're both gone. So I just don't know who scores. And maybe Pat McCall is super awesome and is always going to be that way, and he's going to average 20 points while shooting extremely high percentage next year, and I could be completely wrong. But I just don't look at the 7 or 8 top guys next year and say, that's an NCAA tournament team or that's a Mountain West title contender. Now, on a more fun note, we need a counter next year for how many alley-oops Pat McCall is going to throw.
Like how many he's going to attempt, and then how many, he connects with?
We just need to know how many times he's throwing the ball at the rim for an alley-oop, because, he's going to throw, 6 to Derek Jones every game. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's happening. Like, he's going to throw it to him. Every time Derek Jones is on the floor, Pat McCall is going to try to throw an alley-oop. He already does it to Okonobo. If Zimmerman comes, we saw Zimmerman can throw down out. Like, Pat McCall is not going to know what to do. He's not going to shoot next year. He's just going to throw it at the rim and tell somebody to go dunk it.
That's his favorite play. Every time he comes off a pick, top of the key, as soon as he gets, a step on the defender, you can see him start to look for, is there a way I can, get someone a shot, right at the rim? Can I lob this up for someone?
It's like a student section thing, but in the media section, can we get a big poster board with the numbers and take them off every time he throws an alley-oop?
That's a good idea.
I think we need to.
You should run that by the Rebellion on Twitter before the start of next year.
I literally think he's going to throw way too many alley-oops next year. Like, remember how Dave Rice was kind of disappointed he tried to throw the one from half court against St. Catharines? That's going to happen every game next year. He's going to throw it up from half court, and Dave Rice is going to be disappointed. It's going to happen on a nightly basis for UNLV next year, and it's going to be awesome.
So you're saying as his alley-oop, as the quantity increases, as he throws more alley-oops next year, the efficiency is going to go down.
Well, I don't think his efficiency was that good this year, was it? Like, because he just puts them up there at times.
You only remember the ones that connect and go in. Like, those are the only ones you remember. No one remembers, like, an alley-oop that's thrown off the backboard or like, off someone's hands out of bounds. You don't remember those. You just remember the ones that, you know, end up with a huge dunk.
Oh, it's going to be, I don't know, it'll be glorious for Pat McCaw throwing alley-oops. I don't know, that's probably the thing I'm most looking forward to next year. Because what if Derek Jones dunked over, like, four guys in that whatever the hell he was in dunk contest for high school kids that wasn't the McDonald's All-American game? Like, kid can dunk.
He's the best dunker in high school right now, without a doubt. Like, even his in-game dunks are crazy. Like, it seemed like every week or every 2 weeks, like, there'd be another viral clip of, you know, him with some crazy dunk in high school. So, like, he can
dunk.
Zimmerman also, like, threw down on someone in the McDonald's game, too.
Oh, yeah. And it was around the – and here's the thing with Zimmerman, and I said it with Chris Wood, and I'll say it. When you're 7 feet tall and you dunk, it just doesn't look as cool when you're 6'2 or 6'6.
Yeah.
It just doesn't, but he's still a good dunker. But I think it was around the NBA All-Star Game and NBA Slam Dunk Contest that Jones had a dunk, and I think it was in-game. I'm not sure, but it was either CBS Sports or NBC Sports, like, put the video up, and the title was Derek Jones Could Win the NBA Slam Dunk Contest.
Yeah.
So – How much time do you think he gets next year? Like, when we get down to the last 10 games of the regular season, is he a regular contributor? Like, is he a guy getting 12 minutes in the rotation or more?
I think that a lot's going to depend on Dwayne Morgan and how, like, I see those two guys as somewhat similar in terms of, like, what they bring. You know, I don't know about outside shooting, but both of those guys are, you know, you sort of want them from the three spot, like, attacking the rim, sort of getting those garbage baskets, you know, running the floor. I see those guys as kind of playing similar roles. So I think if Dwayne Morgan is like a star next year, then maybe a little less for Derek Jones, or maybe they can play together. I'm not sure. Joe, is he playing? I think he'll be in the rotation. I mean, if we're looking at it right now, we're going through the roster and we're saying like they only have seven. They only have seven guys, and like, is that going to be enough? Like, you got to think that Jones is going to be in the rotation and playing a role by the end of the year. I'd say the same for Poizer.
Yeah, what do you think Poizer will be next year for UNLV?
In terms of position?
Just whatever. Like, how much is he going to play? What's he going to, like, what the hell is he going to do?
A little mix of one and the two. I think he'll probably, he's gone on Twitter, and, you know, see, he doesn't like being called, you know, a shooting guard or a combo guard. He wants to be a point guard, but, like, everyone.
Good. I'm going to call him a shooting guard.
He's like, what is he, 6'5", 6'6"? I think he's got, and like, everyone who comes into college wants to say they're a point guard. Jalon Kendrick said he was a point guard. Like, they all want to be listed as a point guard. No one plays point guard in college. Like, they all end up at shooting guard or on the wing. So I think, like, most of his minutes will come off the ball. I could see him passing, you know, Cook by the end of the season on the depth chart. I can't see him passing, like, Cornish or Seagares. So, like, maybe he's like your fourth guard behind, like, Cornish, McCaw, Seagares, and like, he's spots in there.
Okay. So point guard next year, Seagares, McCaw, I think, will handle almost all of the minutes, but sort of is Cook the third guy and then Poizer the fourth guy, at least kind of to start?
Yeah, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, Cook plays point guard. Like, I don't think I've ever seen a play.
He's probably, I guess, unless you think Seagares is a natural point guard, Cook is like the only true point on the roster as of this point, because, you know, Poizer's kind of a combo, McCaw is kind of like a one through three combo, Seagares I think is more of a combo guy, like more of a shooter at the point guard spot. So Cook is like the only real like true point, but the problem is he can't shoot, and he's coming off an ACL tear.
Yeah, so Cook's not playing next year unless McCaw has to play a lot of four or something.
Yeah, I think Cook is probably your deep depth.
Okay. Well, hey, that's better than they had this year after Kendall Smith left.
Hey, I mean, having a second or third point guard, it could at some point. No reason to think like all these guys are going to be healthy all season long. So I'm sure Cook will get in there at some point and have a chance to do something. But I think Poizer is going to pass him on the depth chart.
All right. You want to know what annoys me?
I do.
I don't know. I don't know if I can top your, like, you told me last week you were, how is singing in the gym going?
I did not go to the gym this week.
Okay, so you didn't get to sing any songs.
No, it was a pretty lazy week. But I'm surprised that something annoys you, because you usually have such a, like, a pleasant disposition. I didn't know that things got to you like that.
See, here's the thing. Like, I'm very laid back, and when it comes to like when it comes to big things, like I don't get annoyed or as upset as I probably should. But there are little things that will sometimes like really piss me off.
Mm-hmm.
Like if whenever I'm like the angriest, it's like, you know, if I stub my toe right after something else happened, it's just kind of a combination of little things.
Okay.
Like, I get the angriest. Well, I don't really play video games anymore. But, like, I would get the angriest when I played video games. Like, that's by far the angriest I will ever
get.
Were you, like, a
sports game guy, or were you, like, an adventure game guy?
Sports, like, I played, like, Halo when I was in high school and stuff and was never any good at it. And so, like, I pretty much only played sports games. But, yeah, like, I had a friend, and we would play, like, MLB The Show and NCAA football. I've broken too many controllers that it's a little bit embarrassing.
Wow. I can't picture that happening. That's crazy. You break controllers?
Like, I played this one, my friend, I played him, and he ran back the opening kickoff, and I broke the controller.
The opening kickoff?
Like,
what are you,
nobody
you, so you're playing, I'm guessing, like 5 minute quarters? So there's 20 minutes left in this,
yeah,
in this video game.
Yeah.
And you're already breaking. There's no way you can come back from a 7-point deficit.
Well, no, that wasn't the thought process. The thought process was I'm angry. So
I could see maybe after like a buzzer beater, you lose a bad beat or something like that.
I mean, he hit two walk-off home runs off me with Jock Jones and Cliff Floyd, and that pretty much pissed me off because those guys shouldn't be hitting home runs. But yeah, that would always piss me off, and I would break controllers over video games.
Oh.
But I haven't played a video game in a while, so. I have a soccer game on my phone that sometimes will get me a little upset, but I don't throw my phone because I like my phone. But like that's my problem. When I do get angry, I throwing things make me feel better.
See,
and so like breaking the controller gave me about 3 seconds of like hell yeah, and then it was like oh shit, that's cost like $50.
I was gonna say how much do controllers run now? I haven't played video games since the original Nintendo. Like I'm not a video game guy, so like. How much
I don't know how much they are now for like PS4 and Xbox One, but like, you know, I played 360 and PlayStation 3 and they were I think like $35-$45.
Wow.
So yeah, it was kind of expensive.
Wow.
To break a controller. So yeah, that's when I would get the most annoyed. But so the thing, I guess we could just go on about that, but that's not what I came to complain about today. What I came to complain about, Mike, and I have a concern for the future, is vertical video. Like, just turn your phone sideways when you're recording something, damn it.
It's
not that hard.
It is awful. I thought, like, newer generation phones, like, solved that. Didn't they? Is that still a thing?
What did they do?
Like, if you...
What do you mean?
Like, I thought that it shot the same rate at the same ratio, aspect ratio, whether you held it vertically or horizontally now. Am I mistaken?
I think you're mistaken.
Okay, because I have sort of an older iPhone, so I still have to turn it sideways. But I thought that...
Like, you should always turn it sideways. No, never. Just always turn it sideways. I don't care. I don't care how new your phone is. Just turn it sideways.
So why? I agree. Whenever I have to watch one of these videos, it's always terrible. Like if I want to watch two people like fighting in a McDonald's, like, and I want to watch that online, like turn your phone sideways so that I can really get into it.
See, it's terrible. See, here's the thing. Here's what my comparison to show you how stupid you are if you don't turn your phone sideways. Take your TV and turn it 90 degrees so that the right side would be the bottom, and that's how stupid you are for holding your phone straight up and down while you record a video. Your eyes are horizontal on your head. Televisions, movies, they're all, like, it's all designed to see, like, we're designed to see horizontally. Everything that's ever been made to be viewed is horizontally except for cell phones because they fit in our hands better that way. So, turn your phone side, and here's the thing, like, I work at a radio station and do video stuff, and the amount of people that work there that don't understand vertical video, I'm not going to make you a video if you shot something on your phone vertically, like, I'm not going to, it's going to look terrible. The amount of people that don't get that, it's bizarre, and they're like, what does that mean? What's wrong with that? And I'm like, there's giant black bars on the side of your screen. Like, no, that's not, we're not doing that. But here's my worry for the future, Mike, is... Snapchat and Vine, and there's a new app called Periscope, which is live video streaming from your cell phone. I'm worried all of those are going to make everyone think that vertical video is okay because it's cell phone to cell phone. Like you don't view Snapchat on your computer.
Yeah.
You view it on your cell phone. You don't view Periscope on your computer. You view it on your cell phone. And I guess you can look at Vine, but I think isn't Vine's format just straight up and down like it's the ratio of a cell phone, right?
I think so.
Like all of those are made for your cell phone, and so like it gives the perception that it's okay to shoot straight up and down when you shouldn't. You should not for any reason do that. Like and I'm worried that in the future, like that's what's gonna, like, everything's just going to be shot straight up and down because Snapchat, Vine, Periscope, I mean, even Instagram to a degree with the way they make you crop videos, like you have to shoot it straight up and down.
Why not take this pet peeve of yours and turn it into a positive or use it as an opportunity and develop some sort of cell phone technology that whether you're holding it vertically or horizontally, it records in the same aspect ratio. Why not do that?
Because I want to be like the people that complain about the Mountain West Missouri Valley Challenge. I just want to complain. I don't want to fix anything.
No, I totally get you. I was gonna say, like maybe it's a generational thing. Like maybe older users don't understand like the difference between vertical and horizontal, and that it does change the ratio. But then, as you're mentioning, like these new apps are all sort of centered around the vertical shooting. So. I guess it's not. I guess now they're sort of training younger people to do it as well, which is the problem.
Well, yeah, I think, like, I guarantee, like, people that work for Snapchat, or do people work for them? I assume they do. That work for, like, Snapchat and Vine and Periscope now. Like, somebody at some point had the conversation, like, everything's vertical here. Horizontal's much better to view things, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, well, people are stupid and don't turn their phones, so this is how we're going to design it because we want to make money. Yeah. Like, to me, it's not that the people making these are like, oh, just do it vertical. It's like, oh, people are too lazy to turn their phones 90 degrees, so let's just do everything vertical. And it's like, you can, like, Snapchat works just fine if you turn it to the side. Periscope works just, do you know what Periscope is, Mike?
I haven't used it yet, but I've heard of it. Like, I know it's a stream, you can sort of set up your phone to stream video, and people can, like, sort of click your link and watch what's coming through your phone.
It is fascinating. Like, you can just get on there and just, like, watch whatever's on there. Like, I watch, like, there's people that work for news channels that, like, go into breaking news, and they are whatever. They're, like, behind the scenes. And then there was one I watched, like, for 10 seconds, some lacrosse team was practicing.
I feel like Periscope is sort of a reiteration of Chat Roulette. That if anyone's old enough to remember that, and that turned into just a bunch of guys like jacking off on camera. Like that's what that's evolved into, and it happened pretty quickly. Like I never used Chat Roulette, but like that's
you knew
you didn't have to use it because that's all that was on there.
Like right now, I haven't seen any of that, but right now, like I just pulled up Lehigh and Bucknell baseball, and I'm about to watch this guy throw a pitch in Pennsylvania, and it's in play, but I can't see far enough to see where it went. I think he got a base hit. So, yeah. Oh, he drove in a run. Look at that. I just saw an RBI signal in Lehigh and Bucknell because of Periscope. It's kind of fascinating. I'll probably get tired of it at one point because it's just a bunch of random stuff, but it's still kind of cool because I can hit X out of this and go watch somebody make bacon in their kitchen and complain about something. So it's pretty fascinating. The problem is this guy needs to turn his phone sideways, and I could have seen the runner coming from third at the same time as I could see the guy running to first base. But no, it's straight up and down. So just turn your phone sideways. It's like it's really not that hard, and it's much, much better. Like it significantly improves everything. Like you can't – like thank God for YouTube for – like, if YouTube ever comes out with something where it's like, oh, you can upload it and our player will make it more viewable if you shot it vertical, I'm going to be mad at YouTube. Because right now, if you have vertical video on YouTube, you put it up there, it's tiny, it takes up, like, one-fourth of the screen, like, it's awful, and they just need to leave it that way so people get it together.
You don't want to encourage people to do it the wrong way.
Exactly. But that's what I'm angry about, and I'm worried too, because I think it's going to take over, and I'm going to be 60 and still complaining about this.
Once Periscope fades away, I feel like it'll lessen the issue for you, and it won't be so much of a big deal. I feel like it's this, you're heightened of it right now because you're getting into Periscope, but once it stops being like baseball games and once the first guy like invents the hack where you can just hack into people's phones and turn on their Periscope without them knowing, and then you sort of like hijacking their phone.
I'm sure it already happened.
Once that happens, it becomes like a big scandal, and like Periscope goes away. and is only used by people 40 and older, that you won't have to worry so much about the vertical and horizontal issue.
I am, though. Like, I am significantly worried about it still. Because, like, Snapchat's not going away.
Yeah.
Like, that's still going strong. So I'm significantly worried about it. But just please turn your phone sideways. Don't make anybody suffer through that.
I'll second that.
Oh, well. I guess I don't know. Maybe I'm part of the problem because, like, I have the rotational lock always on my phone because I hate when my phone auto-turns to the side.
You can do that?
Yeah, what kind of phone do you have?
It's an iPhone.
Yeah, what number? Give me the number.
It's
4, 5, 5S.
I don't know. 6, it's black.
27.
I don't know. It's black. I got it like in last August, so whatever that one was.
I mean, I don't know the timeline, so
I don't know what number it is, but if it has a lock, I don't like it when I turn it like sideways by accident when I'm doing something, and then the whole screen turns,
like,
so I can turn that off.
Like, can you just slide up like the bottom of the screen? Just slide up. Does anything pull up for you? Okay, and then you should see an airplane, a little Wi-Fi signal.
Yep.
All the way on the right should be a little lock with a circle.
Portrait orientation lock on.
Man, what have you been doing with your life, Mike?
I'm not big into the phone stuff, I guess.
I hope anybody still listening thinks you're the idiot and is not like, oh my god, I didn't know you could do that.
Yeah, look at that. I'm turning it sideways, everything's sticking up. Awesome. Thanks, man. That's why people should listen to this podcast. I can't be the only one who didn't know that was a thing. Like,
so should we turn this into a how-to podcast?
I for very simple things that I don't understand. Yes.
I'm pretty sure there's a guy on YouTube that just does how-to videos and, like, makes a ton of money through the ads on YouTube. Like, he just does, like, how-to simple crap around the house, and people watch it because nobody knows how to do anything. I don't. I will watch it, too. And he makes a bunch of money off of it. So maybe that's what we should do. We should just completely change our path.
Get rid of the sports thing.
Yeah. Just get no more sports. Just we'll complain about stuff and tell you how to do stuff.
Okay.
Except I don't know how to do anything.
Yeah, that's the problem,
Except that. Like, I know how to do that.
All I know how to do is complain. I only have the first half of that equation down.
Okay. Well, maybe we can how to complain properly. I don't know. But people are better at it than us, because people complain about this Missouri Valley Challenge, and that's, like, incredible to complain about.
I'll complain about that next week. I'll completely flip my my perspective on that, and I'll come back and I'll be against it next week. We could do, like, a point-counterpoint thing.
Those damn Shockers. Why we got to play? And now you get, if you're UNLV, you get to see the awesome Shocker hand sign that they put on Sports Illustrated, which is very sexual, but they've adopted it because it's somehow a W and for Shockers.
Yeah.
Like, it's a win-win for everybody.
Like, it's not going to be a bad thing.
Okay, but if you go to that game and you periscope it in December, turn your damn phone sideways. You, Mike, and everybody else listening.
Like, live events have to ban that at some point, don't they?
I know, yeah. Like,
hard to tell if someone's just holding their phone or if they're, like, recording, like, personal video or if they're broadcasting, like, video. But at some point, that's got to be, like, a rights issue.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's going to – I don't think Lehigh and Bucknell baseball matters. But
some point, the corporation will come in and they'll put a stop to this because it's fun.
Yeah, like, at some point, someone's going to do it at the Super Bowl. Well, before that, actually. At some point, someone's going to do it at a baseball game this year, and Major League Baseball is going to be like, no, thank you. Like they're trying to get rid of people uploading GIFs on Twitter, like, during the game, and they haven't been successful at that. But, like, they're not going to like the whole live periscope at a game, but oh well. They'll have to get over it for now. Because, I don't know, like, would that really cut into anything?
It might not, but that's not the issue. The issue is, like, they paid $1 billion for the rights to broadcast it. They don't want people watching it.
True.
They don't want people watching it through your phone. They want people watching it through their network.
But, like, is anybody going to watch through Periscope? Like, is anybody going to watch an important, like...
It's not the issue. The issue is black,
it is the
black
issue.
And white. They pay for the broadcasting rights. They're the only people that want to broadcast it.
But stop being black and white. We're making the issue different than what it is. Like, right now, you can watch, like, every sporting event. Not every, but almost every sporting event on your phone. Like, sure, you've got to sign up with a TV provider, but you know somebody that has a TV provider. You can watch everything on your phone, So you can, like, watch the quality broadcast. You don't need to watch somebody's Periscope that has that's holding their phone straight up and down.
Unless you want to see it unless it has, like, maybe it has a unique perspective. Maybe someone's watching the game from a different location, and you get, like, a different viewpoint or something, which could be interesting.
Maybe you know, Barry Chaney will do Periscope from the bench next year during basketball games, and that'll be a fun thing to watch.
So you get someone in the first row of a say you're at the Thomas and Mack Center, you get someone in the first row behind the bench, they've turned their Periscope on, they hold it up over the huddle during timeouts and stuff. You wouldn't watch that? Like, if you...
Ooh. Well, no, I would, because they would have a better view than we do.
Exactly. And you could probably pick up audio, you see what's going on, you can see... Yeah, like that. I could see people, like, tuning into that. You get a good spot, you say, like, hey, during TV timeouts or whatever, tune into, you know, come to my Periscope.
Sideline reporters are in danger.
Mm.
They're not going to have... They're sitting over eavesdropping on the huddle is going to be useless because of Periscope. Or maybe sideline reporters can just sit at home and just watch Periscope of the huddle and then just do their little lines from there, making their job easier.
This is all going to get banned.
Well, I think Twitter's behind it, so it's not like, you know, Johnny in West Virginia put it together.
So am I going to have to get on Periscope now? Is that something? Like, I don't do anything interesting enough that people would want to watch it, but, like, I feel like for my job, I kind of have to be on social media at least a little bit. Like, I do Twitter.
You should probably get on it to, yes, pay attention to it, but not necessarily to broadcast it.
I downloaded Vine at the beginning of the year. I kind of played around with it. I didn't really like it, so I ended up not doing it. But, like, I kind of have to be aware of it, so I'm like, I mostly, well, whatever some new thing comes up, I kind of hope that it goes away quietly. Because then if it blows up and becomes the next big thing, then it's like just one more thing that I have to sort of do and learn. And I'm at that age now where new technology, because there's a point where, like, you, new technology is like very, you're very adaptable to it and you're very open to it. And then you just hit an age and it just stops and everything that's new is very hard to understand. And I already hit that.
Oh, that's not good. Well, like, I don't think you have to be on Vine, because pretty much everybody who makes a Vine posts it on Twitter. So it's like, you can pretty much see any important Vine on Twitter.
Mm.
Like, you kind of have a bunch of overlap there. Like, I have an Instagram. I don't really post too much, but I use it just to look at other things and, watch people that I may have to pay attention to. So, yeah, you should get on Periscope just to be on it. But you might be worried somebody's going to hack in and they're going to stream you getting dressed in the morning.
I could, because I do set up my phone for that.
Yeah.
I do position it, like, in front of the mirror, like, while I'm doing my morning routine, so.
Okay. All right. What interesting things should I do? Should I do, should I Periscope, like, behind the scenes when I'm doing play-by-play for UNLV softball
on
Tuesday?
Yeah, I mean, why not? Like, just set it up, like, so it's got sort of you in the foreground and then maybe, like, the field sort of in the side ground, if that's a word. And sort of, yeah, so people can watch you calling the game.
Will we get more people watching my Periscope than watching the actual broadcast?
If you make yourself bigger than the game, then yeah.
And listen, it's like a 2:00 game on Tuesday, so there's a good chance nobody's going to be watching it as is. So I might do that just to boost my profile.
Yeah, I mean, I would check with the Mountain West first and make sure they're cool with it.
Eh, I like to live dangerously. But anyway, he's Mike Grimala over at runrebs.com. I'm Tyler Bischoff here at Mountain West Connection. This has been the Towel Boys. Thanks for tuning in.